Okay, I'm going to start in Matthew 22, the first verse. And this is a parable about a bridegroom's feast. I guess we don't have anything quite like that these days. This is apparently a very big, very big party. Maybe it went over multiple days. I don't know. I've heard lots of very elaborate descriptions of what kind of things they would do at feasts like this. But it was a very big, very special party. The king's son is getting married. Matthew chapter 22, starting in the first verse. Jesus answered and spoke to them again by parables and said, "The kingdom of heaven is like a certain king who arranged a marriage for his son. He sent out his servants to call those who were invited to the wedding, and they were not willing to come. Again, he sent out other servants saying, 'Tell those who are invited, see, I have prepared my dinner. The oxen, fatted calf were killed, and all things are ready. Come to the wedding.' But they made light of it and went their ways, one to his own farm, another to his business, and the rest seized his servants and treated them spitefully and killed them. But when the king heard about this, he was furious, and he sent out his armies and destroyed those murderers and burned up their city. And he said to his servants, 'The wedding is ready, but those who were invited were not worthy. Therefore, go into the highways, and as many as you can find, invite to the wedding.' So those servants went out into the highways and gathered together all who they found, both bad and good, and the wedding hall was filled with guests. But when the king came in to see the guests, he saw a man who did not have on a wedding garment. And he said to him, 'Friend, how did you come in here without a wedding garment?' And he was speechless. The king said to the servants, 'Bind this man hand and foot, and take him away, and cast him into outer darkness, and there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. For many are called, but few are chosen.'" I just want to kind of go back through this story and tell the story and discuss it a little bit before we do prayer time today. What happens in this story? Just tell the story. It's kind of an interesting story. And so then there's some things that really stood out to me. Jesus, our Abba, said, "So the kingdom of heaven is like." So this is kind of the way it works with God and us and coming into his kingdom. There's a king, and his son was getting married. The king spares no expense or spares no constraint in preparing the greatest party that you can imagine. He wants to celebrate this. It's a wonderful event. It's the beginning of a new era for the king, for his son, for the kingdom also. And he's invited his friends and acquaintances. He carefully chose them. They were ones that were specifically appropriate for this event, ones that he knew. There were history with these people. It was the ones that he wanted to come, and everything he got ready. There were animals that were specifically designated probably months ahead of time. These are going to be the ones, and they were prepared, fed the right things, and then killed at the right time, and then cooked, and prepared and cooked. Anyone ever killed an animal, or at least got it after it was killed, and then from that point prepared it? It's a lot different than opening the plastic saran wrap thingy and putting the thing in the oven or putting the turkey in the bag. There's a lot of work that went on before that. You see, can you imagine the amount of preparation that's going on here? Carefully selecting things. Tables were set. Special spices were ordered and reused. They were laid out. Decorations were set out. The only thing they needed now was the guests. So the servants went out, taking the word to the special guests. "Come on, everyone, it's time. The king's son is getting married. Come and celebrate with us. The dinner's all ready." But they didn't get excited about this opportunity. From the story, you see that they didn't even want to come. Some felt it was not the greatest opportunity in the land at that point. There were other things better to do. Some, they had other things going on that were more fun and more interesting right now. Maybe they felt it wasn't, in their opinion, the best show in town. There were other things that kind of suited them better. So he tells us that some felt there was better use for their time in doing either their regular work, taking care of their farms and their homes. Maybe there were some that said they didn't feel it was a good productive use of their time, standing around saying nice things about the king and his son. There were productive things to be doing. It's like going into a worship service where you just stand around singing songs and saying nice things about God. If you think about it, it may not appear to be the most productive thing to do. It may feel like there are other things that I could, ought to be doing. Surely everyone knows this feeling. But this is, it's kind of like us thinking about the time that we would spend in the presence of the Lord and what we're weighing off against and how we would process all of that. Sometimes it doesn't feel like the best thing going on right at the time. Sometimes it doesn't feel like the most productive use of our time. But spending time with the kingdom is always productive, is always something good. And even though it doesn't seem like it at the time, some in this story felt like their businesses needed to be tended. It says they went off to work on things related to their business. Maybe they felt they don't have time to take off work for this kind of thing. I really need to keep ahead of the competition. It says some despise this party so much, or maybe they dislike the king, I don't know. They jeered and mocked the messengers. They laughed at these guys that came to tell them it was time to come. They roughed them up. They even got violent with them. They hit them. It says even that they killed some of them. But word got back to the king. Right? The king's not happy. This is not the kind of man that you disrespect like this. He sends his armies, and it says that they killed the people that killed the servants, and they burned up their city so much for their business that they were working on, right? And after all this, he sends out his servants again. This time he sends them to everyone else. And he says to them, it says to the good people and the bad people he sent them to. The king was determined to have a full hall filled with guests. And he says to them, come on in. I have a wedding feast ready. But the other people that I had invited weren't willing to come. Come on in. It's all ready. The other ones were worthy to come, so now we're inviting everyone. Does it say that he invited the first bunch, and they weren't worthy, so then he went out and invited a bunch of other people that were worthy? No, it actually doesn't. It says that he went out and invited everyone that in the highways, the good people and the bad people, he invited them all in. They needed to come dressed appropriately, apparently. They needed to come dressed in wedding garments. Not sure what those look like. Today, it may be a nice suit with a new tie, or a pretty dress with some new shoes, or something that was appropriate for a wedding. It doesn't really tell us what it was these days, but you were expected to come dressed appropriately for a wedding. This is not a come as you are, everyone is okay party. Anyone could come to the party, but you needed garments. You needed the proper clothing to come. You weren't supposed to come in your street clothes. So after this happens, one guy decides that he's going to come, but he's not going to let anyone tell him what to do or tell him what to wear. He's not going to be pushed around. He says he'll come, but he'll wear what he pleases. He says, I'll come to your celebration, but I'll do what I want. I'll say what I want. I'll compliment what I want. Or not compliment what I want. Maybe someone say, good for you. Don't let anyone push you around. Be your own person. You be you. The king wasn't that way. The king didn't feel that way about this. He finds out, and he pulls him aside, and he says, so what made you think that this was going to be okay? Remember, this is not
rich uncle Joe's wedding. This is the king's wedding. And the king in those days can remove your head from your shoulders just because he wants to. And there wasn't any respect going on for this king's position. The king gave an invitation that you could never earn, much more than you could ever expect to receive. What made you think you could show disrespect to the king that gave you the invitation that you could come and take part in his party, eat his food, participate in the celebration, and not come and do it with respect for his family and his son? So the king says, tie him up and get him out of here. Throw him out where life is tough and there's darkness and weeping and gnashing of teeth. There's some parts in this story that really stand out to me. I'll just wrap up with going through these points. It's surprising to me, some people got invited to this great party and didn't want to come. It's like today, I think, people who actually do understand what we're saying, what God is offering, but they really don't want it. For variety of reasons. What does the king offer us? What does God offer us? He offers us understanding. By that I mean, he offers us to help us to see who we really are. We get to see truth. We get to see, from his perspective, what we really are and what our world really is. And we get to find out the truth and the real answers to lots of deep and difficult questions. We value truth, not necessarily everybody does, but we do. We value that understanding. What else does the king offer us? He offers us focus. We get a chance to get involved in the real big things, the great mission that's happening on planet Earth. We get a chance to get involved in what God is actually trying to do. That's a big deal. That's something that's worth sacrificing. That's something that gives us meaning for our life. It's something that requires work, too. It requires us not doing necessarily what we feel like doing, but we do what makes sense for the mission and the purpose we're given. It's a trade-off. It's a thing we get to participate in if we come appropriately and in the appropriate mindset to do the purpose we're given. He offers us a future here on Earth. We get to see the rewards of our hard work as we labor, as we work for him. But he also offers us a destiny in heaven. We get to spend our eternity with God in heaven, doing his mission work forever. But it isn't a treat. It's work sometimes. It's doing what we didn't want to do sometimes. It's exchanging a life where you seek, where you're looking for what's fun, a life where you're looking for what fulfills you yourself, a life where you're looking for what you want to do. You exchange that for a life that's about responsibility, about carefully considering what kind of things would be appropriate to the mission he's giving me. A life of trying to sort through what do I think would please God. Sitting here thinking about 2021 and trying to set priorities. It's a life where you say, what do I think would please the king? It may not be easy. It doesn't always just send us an email and say, okay, here's priorities for 2021. Arrange your schedule accordingly. It's a process of sitting down and thinking, what do I think would please him? And then really, I think part of being his is that we go through that process. We say, well, based on what I know about him, based on what I know he's trying to do, I'm going to struggle with this and I'm going to try to figure out what I can do that would please him. The next thing that stood out to me about this story is it's not a come-as-you-are party. I wonder what it looked like when people were trying to find their garments. As far as I know, the invitation from the servant didn't come with a speck for what the garment should look like. And he went to all kinds of people, but surely they came from all different walks of life, the wealthy and the poor, and people that had almost nothing, people that had a great deal. And they accepted the invitation, and now how do I get ready? Some of them may have been in the king's palace before. Probably most of them hadn't. Maybe the ones that had it didn't even know anybody who had it. So what am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to arrive? I don't know this thing. I don't know the protocol. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I imagine they would be scurrying around trying to figure out how should I prepare for this. Asking the friends, asking the relatives, asking distant acquaintances that they might have been there. What is the proper dress? What am I supposed to wear? And once they figure out what they're supposed to wear, how am I supposed to afford it? Where am I supposed to find it? And with some people, it's probably not even an option there. That kind of money, those kind of things. Looking through their closets and thinking, what would please the king that I could wear, that I can figure out, that I can afford, that I can wear? Scurrying around, I'm sure, to buy what they could find, whatever they could afford, to adapt something that they had, to borrow something. Maybe they could borrow something from one of those people that didn't accept the invitation, that had their businesses to tend to, I don't know. In the end, I think the focus was on struggling with that question, what would the king expect? What can I do that would please him, that would look, would seem appropriate? And this is the same struggle I was just talking about, that I think that God likes when we go through it. And we try to figure out what is it that he would expect from me, that he would want from me. And then when our heart is in that, and we're actually doing it, trying to do that, and I think we please him. How much did they cost? Their outfits, I think they cost a very different amounts depending on how much money people had. I think some probably cost a great deal. Some probably cost very little. And I personally think the king would be watching the same way he was watching people put money in the offering box in that story. And Jesus was watching them drop in the various different amounts of money. And the one woman that he said gave the most was the one that actually gave the least amount of money. You remember that story? And as people arranged their garments according to what they could afford, that would please him. I think it doesn't matter as much about how much money they pay. It matters how much of themselves they gave to get what they wore. How much of themselves they gave to do it. I think that's what the king was looking for. And that's why this man's attitude was so disrespectful, was so unacceptable to the king. Yeah, I want to come, but I'm not even going to try. The bottom goal, the bottom line goal, I think, for the people who pleased him was that they tried to make a good impression. It wasn't a come as you are party. It was a come prepared to impress the king party. Another thing that stands out is the statement, many are called, few are chosen. What does that mean? Well, how many were invited to the feast? How many were invited to the feast? But some. All the people that turned him down the first time, right? There was some group, it wasn't everybody, there was some group that were invited to the feast. They were originally invited to the feast. Gotta have reason. Those are the ones that were originally invited to the feast. By the time it's all done, how many were invited to the feast? Everybody. Because the second invitation went out to everybody that wasn't in the first invitation. Right? The second invitation was to everyone that didn't already turn it down. And he invited the good, the bad, the worthy, the unworthy. So the first one went to everyone who ended up rejecting him, and the second one went to everyone else. So in the end, everyone got an invitation. How many are called to be followers of Christ? Everyone. some rejected him. But in the end, the call went out to everyone. Everyone come in. Many were chosen. Well, how many were at the feast that didn't end up getting thrown out? Those are the ones that didn't turn down this invitation and received it. The ones that accepted the invitation and received it. And the ones that came dressed appropriately with whatever means that they had. So what does it mean to us? God calls everyone to follow him. Everyone to become believers. He calls the worthy and the unworthy. He calls the good the bad. You don't have to be good to be called. You don't have to be worthy to be called. In fact, the second group were by definition the unworthy ones. Sorry. Because the first bunch of the ones that he wanted, the ones that he considered worthy, turned out those weren't worthy at all. He sent the second batch of invitations to all of them that he had not had on the first set. He makes a way for everybody to come to him. What does he require? Well, from the story I can see, there's at least two things. It requires you to stop doing whatever you're doing, like James and John did when they were fishing, Jesus called them, and they just left their stuff, and they came and followed him, their business, or whatever, like when they came in this story, sent out the invitations. Yeah, they would have had to stop doing what they were doing and set aside whatever days it was and focus on this celebration. It requires you to set aside whatever you're doing and focus on him. Rearrange your life to revolve around what can I do to please the King. And the second, it requires dedicating yourself to doing whatever you think the King would want. Garments. What can I do to please the King when I come into his presence? Those are the things that was required. And this, as Jesus says, is what the kingdom of God is like. As we think about 2021, setting out our goals, our plans, I want to invite us all to think about what can I do that would make God happy. I don't know what that is. And I think it's different for each one of us. But it's a question that's worth asking. It's like weighing on my plans. What have I got in these plans? What have I got in my priorities? And I think will make God happy. When the year is done and looking back at it, I can feel a satisfaction that those things I did for the purpose of pleasing God. And I honestly believe that's the kind of sacrifice that he's looking for from us. We don't have to be perfect. We don't have to have the best plan. We don't have to have the richest resources. We just need a heart that's trying with whatever we have to do. I want to invite us now to spend some time praying with each other and praying for each other. Just to finish up this Sunday morning. And in just a minute, I'll invite you to break up into groups and, I don't know, 3, 4, 5, I don't know, somewhere between 5 and, I don't know, as long as you're happy with your group, that's what matters. 5 or 7 or so will work well. If you have 12, it might take you longer. Because what I want us to do is I want us to do prayer in prayer for two things. So I want us to do 2 rounds of praying with each other. So in your group, there's someone who's going to write, some scribe, and I have some pens that can be easily seen from a distance. And the way I've done this, we did it before on Sunday night, is just kind of everyone's in a circle, and a person writes something, and you set it in the middle of the circle, everyone can see it. And I want you first to go around and ask each person, I'm talking about national things, worldwide things, what is it that God has laid on your heart that is either burning for you or that you are particularly praying for that God would do in this year or in this season? Talking about peaceful resolution to the election, talking about quick into COVID, distribution of vaccinations. I'm just making up the kind of things that whatever about the national stuff is on your heart. I want you say it in the script and write it down, and then I want everyone in the group to pray for that. We're going to pray for what God has laid on the hearts of the people that are in the group. Does that make sense? And so you're just going to go around and give everyone a chance to pray for something on that page. And then when you're done with that, I want you to ask if anyone has a personal request. My uncle, my friend, my school that's coming up, my whatever. So you're, you know, more personal in the second time. Does that make sense? You're free to use, there's a few tables that are out here you can use. You can just get around in a circle and just rearrange the chairs however it works. But I have some paper and Sharpies. But they're Sharpies that you can use to write if you want to write something that you can see. So go ahead, and then when you're done, this is informal, when you're done, then we can have lunch together. David, if you can kick off music when it's possible back there.
Thank you.
In the background.
You play something? Right. You can have at least two people. You and me. What?
No. Do you want to try? Do you need to stay back here?
No, but...